Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
When it comes down to it, what are we at our core? We are North American waterfowl.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the North American Waterfowler Podcast. My name is Elliot. I am your host here, and I appreciate you listening to these episodes in the off season. A lot of guys, once season is over, they put their waterfowl thoughts, their waterfowl dreams on the back burner, and they just move on to something else. And I know if you're listening to this in March, March 11th, I'm recording this. If you are listening to this, you are a hardcore North American waterfowler, because there are some of us and that can't turn it off. And I've talked about this before. I've told people I wish that I had a dial to dial down my love of this sport, because when I'm at my best and things are going well, I love being this passionate about waterfowl hunting. I love loving it this much, but there are times which I wish it would just subside a little bit. And if you're listening to this in March, 2 months after waterfowl season ended, then you're probably very similar to that. You just eat, sleep, and breathe it, and you can't get enough. And that's where I'm certainly at. I had a time where, I mean, from my YouTube channels to the podcast to the app, to everything, I would go onto Facebook, it was waterfowl. I'd go onto YouTube, all they showed me was waterfowl. I'd go onto Instagram, all they showed was waterfowl. And finally, I was like, okay, I have to have a place that I can go where it's not waterfowl content. So I went through my Instagram account, and I just started like getting rid of accounts that I follow. Like I don't follow that many on there. And more importantly, when I'm going through reels, if there's anything waterfowl, I just flip as quickly as I can. I'm trying to show the algorithm that give them that signal, like, don't show me waterfowl stuff. And I went through and I was adding stuff like about white sharks, stuff, ocean, real cool ocean stuff. And so finally the algorithm works. So finally I've got one little place that I don't see much waterfowl content, and that's Instagram. And I still put out plenty of content myself on Instagram, and it's waterfowl related. But as far as that's my one little place that I can go and not be shown waterfowl in my face every second, waterfowl, waterfowl, waterfowl. So thank God for that. But anyway, thank you guys for listening. Today we are going to get back on the migration analysis, and we are jumping over to the Pacific Flyway, Northern Pacific. We had Scott on from kind of mid-California and talked to him, and now we're going to go up a little farther to the north, out of California, And I don't know how much my guest wants to tell you about exactly where he's hunting, because I can tell you this about this guest coming on. I have never, ever watched from afar anyone that's more successful than this individual. He would make comments on some of my YouTube videos, and I started following him on Instagram. This was, a while ago, a couple years ago. And I remember watching his Instagram account, and during the hunting season, it was like mallard limit, mallard limit, mallard limit. I mean, like unbelievable amount of mallard limits. And we had some interaction, because I was to the point where I was like, what in the hell? How in the world can anyone be this successful with mallards day in and day out? It's unbelievable. And I remember just scratching my head about it. Like, I just can't imagine this level of success from anyone with mallards. And so fast forward to this year, he, unbeknownst to me, joined up on the app, the North American Waterfowler, which is on iOS, it's on Android. You can go to the NorthAmericanWaterfowler.com. You can find it there. And all of a sudden, normally, in the last few years, the leaders... So we've got a leaderboard over there. I should probably take a step back and explain that. We've got a leaderboard over there. And the leaderboard works as each individual species has a point value. And it's very subjective. And some people agree with my assessment of the values of these ducks. Some people don't, and it's interesting. It's an interesting discussion. So if I go through the values, just to kind of give you a little bit of an idea of what they look like, it's in alphabetical order. Brant goose is 7, canvasback is 7, hybrids 10 points. Model duck is 6, old squaw 6, pintail drake 6, mallard drake 5, wood duck 4, sandhill crane 7, tundra swan 10, wood duck hen 2, just throwing out some so you'll see kind of what shoveler 2, snow goose 2, ross goose 3, mourning dove 1, mallard hen 2, king eider 6. So just give you an idea, teal are 3, gadwalls are 3. So I've assigned those based on what I perceive is the general population of waterfowl hunters, kind of what they view the most valuable species when to have in their bag. And I would really like to, in the future, break this down a little bit so that there's a different value system for each flyway. Because I know out in the Pacific flyway, you know, there's some ducks out there, maybe like the cinnamon teal, that if I shot a cinnamon teal drake, I think I would value it higher than someone in the Pacific flyway that shoots quite a bit of them. So I think it needs to be specific to each flyway. A black duck in Kansas, I've never even seen one, I think should probably be a 7. At an Atlantic flyway, I don't think it should be a 7. So in time, I would like to break the value system down by flyway. And let me tell you guys again with this is all in good fun. If you're the type of person, you're like, you know, I don't think that people should be having a leaderboard game and it makes people care too much about the numbers. Well, if you feel that way, don't participate. I understand. But we over here at North American Waterfowler, we feel like it's just fun. It's just fun between friends. It's loose. It's nothing too specific. So the leaderboard's over there. And if we go back into the leaderboards over the last years, let me see where I'm at here. Let me go to the seasons here. Typically, it is won by Matt at High Prairie Sportsman. Let's see. Actually, Matt took 2nd. The winner was Colin Peterson in 21-22 with a score of 1,068. Matt was 2nd. Golden Boy was 10th. Golden Boy's normally right up there. 22-23. D&D Hackett was 1st with 1,374. Matt was 2nd. Golden Boy was 8th. Titus was 7th with 774. Then this year, jumping forward, my guest today was at 1568, and he took 1st. It was the highest point total ever. It was the highest point total ever. And if you go into, you can sort this leaderboard by mallards. Let me sort it by mallards. He had 1,446 of his points were mallards. So like he's shooting specifically mallards. The second place in mallards was 482 points. Third place was 473. And that's a lot of mallards. And his mallard total is 1,446. And we will ask him today exactly how many shot. But this is absolutely unbelievable amount of mallard drakes killed by this individual. And so when I saw him jump up on the leaderboards here on the app and I was watching, first of all, I didn't make the connection to who it was. And then I reached out to him. I saw him on Instagram. I said, yes, I know who that is. I've interacted with this person. I've interacted with him more than once. So I knew who it was. I knew it was a legitimate total. And because this is self-reporting, it wasn't just something that people were reporting. And so I wanted to have him on because I want to talk to him about what in the heck is he doing to have that level of success. And I did talk to him and he averages over, now they can shoot seven out there. He averages over five mallard drakes per hunt, like 5.5 mallard drakes per hunt, which is just unbelievable. Just unbelievable. So I want to talk to him. I cannot wait to talk to him because I just want to find out what in the world is the duck hunting where he's at just that good? It has to be better than it is here. I don't think there's any way in this state you could average 5.5 or anywhere close to even 4 mallard drakes per hunt for your whole season. Over an entire season, averaging almost 5 mallard drakes per hunt. That is just something that is just unbelievable. Now, I know that Titus in the last couple of years, he averaged over 5 ducks a hunt. I don't think he averaged over 5 mallard drakes a hunt, but he did average over 5 a hunt. So I know there are some places out there where the waterfowling is unbelievable. And I think out there, they don't get in on all of the out-of-state pressure because you got to cross the Rocky Mountains. And it's just a much bigger trip for all those guys from the South that love to travel. Georgia travels well. Arkansas travels well. Louisiana, South Carolina, Alabama. All those states travel like you wouldn't believe. And I think when you're talking about the Pacific Northwest, that's just too much to get all that traffic out there. So I think that probably goes into it. I'm not sure because there is high population out there. You know, I mean, those states, when you get in California, you know, you've got Portland, you've got a lot of a population out there. But I don't think you get the out-of-state flow because it's so much harder to get there. So we are going to talk to him today about his background, what he feels like is his secret to success. And I'm not going to share where he's at because of the success he has. If he wants to tell what state he's in, he can, but I'll tell you it's Pacific Northwest. It's not California. So that is going to be really fun. I'm really looking forward to that, to having him on. Before we have him on, I want to remind you guys, as you're looking for your off-season waterfowl needs, fabrand.com, FDH10 will get you 10% off. Go and take a look before you make any of your purchases. Go take a look. See what they've got. Compare the prices. I can tell you it's a quality equipment, from decoys to blinds to bags to clothing. Really, really quality equipment. I think you owe it to yourself to check it out and see what that code will do for you in your total before you buy anything else. Also, Motion Ducks decoy spreader system. If you don't have a good water system, or if you're using traditional jerk rigs even, you want to switch over to Motion Ducks. It's easier to transport. It's easier to set up. It's less likely for the dog to get tangled in it. It is the best jerk rig system on the market. I'm telling you. MotionDucks.com. Again, FDH10. Onyx Hunt. If you're not using it, get it now. If I wasn't used, I can't tell you how the second I would be signing up. It is the best system for expanding your range in waterfowl hunting. When you go on trips, when you want to share points with friends and meet up. And now they've got it to where I used to say, man, I wish that they had a mapping system attached to it. So you could like it. Now it's attached to Google Maps. So you can put a pin, you can hit, get to it by Google or Apple Maps, and boom, you're direct there. It's just amazing. Check it out. And also, I did want to mention, I feed Georgie Purina Pro Plan. I have fed her that since she was a baby. It's what Chris Jobman, my co-host on the other podcast, the Flatlanders podcast with Chris Jobman, it's what he told me. It's what he feeds all his dogs. And I cannot tell you, I go out and I take my dog out. People comment on her coat and the shininess of her coat almost every single time I take her out. Remarkable looking dog, healthy as can be, super shiny coat, Purina Pro Plan. And if you like what I've talked about the app, guys, sign up. It is $4.99 a month, or you can pay a one fee for a year. You can start backlogging all your stuff. If you're the type of guy that writes on a journal or whatever, you can go in and fill those all in, put them all in. It's a really fun system, and you can just play with the filters and take a look at all sorts of different statistics. That this is the only place where you can take a look at 26,000 hunts, just randomly put in by people and check how are sunny versus cloudy. How does wind affect things? You can play with the filters. There's no other system out there I have ever seen, and I have looked and looked and looked, that offers this type of product where you can just learn and play with numbers through the filter system. Not to mention putting in your pictures from each hunt, keeping track of your dog retrieves, connecting with your friends on there. It's a really, really cool place. So, all right, let's go ahead now and have on, from the Pacific Northwest, absolute slayer, duck killer, Jacob Caffrey. Here we go. So how are you doing tonight, Jacob?
I'm doing good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I talked you up pretty good on the intro, I got to say. I've never seen anyone that kills the number of mallards that you kill. When I first started following your Instagram account, because you and I talked back and forth a little bit, like a while ago.
Yeah, I've been watching your YouTube channel quite a bit for a long time.
I remember when I started following your Instagram account, I remember at that time just like scratching my head, like, what in the hell is going on here? It's like day after day after day after day. So we're going to unravel the mystery to what in the world you are doing to kill that number of mallards. Because you're dwarfing like people like Matt, High Praise Sportsman, kills about as many as any, you know, and like my buddy Aiden. I mean, they're killing like in the mid 200s as far as ducks. And on the leaderboards, you like made them look like they weren't killing anything as far as the points go.
Yeah.
I mean, those people are like the top 1% of number of ducks harvest that I know in my life are like Matt and Aiden. And you jump on the leaderboard and you're like, I don't know. Unbelievable. Congratulations on figuring it out.
Thanks. It's been a lot of work. I mean, I still have a long ways to go. I just turned 25.
Jeez.
Been doing it pretty heavy for about 6 years. It's just a big learning curve. I'm following it all away and building off of it year after year.
Right. I want to go back into like your upbringing into the sport. But for right now, what does a waterfowl season look like for you schedule-wise? Like, I assume that you have a job. How does it work into your hunting? How much do you travel? How many, just like, what does your typical season look like from start to finish?
So we start up here, I want to say it's the third Saturday in October every year. It's like right around like the 15th or 16th. And by then I'm laid off from my job. And I have a little side gig too that I use to carry me through the off time. But yeah, so we kick it off around the 16th of October, and then it goes nonstop all the way through January.
So you're not working during waterfowl season?
No. I have a little side gig. I buy and resell stuff online. I have an eBay account.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so don't work really too much. And yeah, we're on the road a lot, driving around. I pretty much just stick to Eastern Washington. I have some buddies in Western Washington, but I usually don't go over there. Just drive around over here and do a lot of scouting. Pretty much hunt every day that we can. I usually don't go after birds until we get our first big push of mallards, because I do a lot of big game hunting too, which starts about the same time as duck season. So, yeah.
What type of habitat are you typically hunting on an average day? Or what are the various types?
Yeah, we have the Columbia River, which is huge. And that flows pretty much through entire Eastern Washington. And that can range from deeper water, cliffy stuff for divers. A lot of guys will hunt divers. And then there's a lot of shallower stuff like sandy bottoms that guys target mallards on. And then we have a lot of marshes too. Not so much like managed through the state. We have a couple like that. Most of them are natural ish. We have reservoirs too.
So you hunt rivers, you got a river you hunt some shallow water, you hunt reservoirs. Which of those areas do you typically hunt more often? Is it vary season to season?
No, pretty consistent shallow water until it freezes up, and then we'll kick over to the Columbia.
And that is that pretty fast moving water?
No, it's just so big. It's hard for it to freeze over. This year it actually did freeze over a lot of the mallard type hunting stuff on the Columbia. The shallower stuff did freeze over, which isn't very common. But yeah.
Are you walking in? Are you kayaking? Do you have a surface drive with a big boat? What's your mode of transportation?
We walk for the most part.
So you're mostly walking.
Yeah. We do have a couple guys with boats that will use boats once in a while, but for the most part, we're walking in.
Do you have a consistent crew of people, or is it you and who all do you hunt with?
Yeah. So for the most part, it's the same two or three guys. My buddy Mark and Brad, they're also laid off during season. So it's mostly us, and then we'll pick up guys like our other buddies, when they can get days off. And then my dad goes with me too quite a bit, on the weekends.
How much scouting, tell me your routine before you, like some people will just go to places that they know other people, how does scouting play a role in how successful does it have to look in order for you guys to say, we're going to hunt this? What's that process look like?
Most of our scouting is not per se like finding X's. It's mostly traffic. It's hard to find spots that are, I guess, X's where birds aren't getting pressured on a day-to-day basis by their guys. So what we look for is good flight lines that birds are using and just flying through. And then we'll set up pretty much as close to underneath the flight line as possible. And we'll just call a bunch, use a lot of motion, make sure the hide's really good. Since it's not an X, the birds are a little bit more wary and they'll circle more often. But as long as there's a pretty good movement, say, I don't know, 20, 30 ducks moving through every 5-10 minutes, we'll call it good enough. And usually we can break down, I'd say, I don't know, 10% of them. So it's definitely a numbers game because you're not getting all of them. But as long as there's a couple hundred ducks flying through an area, we usually call it good enough and can get them.
Are you guys really aggressive with your call? I know like Jake down in Arkansas, that's completely different how they run their calls and their calling philosophy versus most of the people in Kansas, where you don't have, you rarely hear three or four guys in Kansas just going nuts with the calls. And I know that's what they do in Arkansas, and Jake kind of brings that here to Kansas. Is that similar to how you guys, are you guys real aggressive?
Yeah, we hammer them. We hammer down on them pretty much from the time we see them to them touching the water. We'll stay aggressive on them, lighten up like the sound and stuff, like make it a little bit softer versus when you first see them. But yeah, we hammer down on them pretty good.
I just can't imagine. There's no place that I've been, no state that I've been in, where you could just find flight lines and have that. Because you averaged, I think you told me you averaged mallards over five per hunt, 5.5 last time we talked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Do you think there. That a big part of that is it number of birds in the area? Is it lack of pressure? What do you feel like enables your group, or and maybe there's more, a lot of people in your area that have the type of success? Well, let me ask that question. Do you feel like that you're way more successful than most people in your area? Or if you go to your area and you're very competent, is your level of success something that's obtainable?
I'd say for the most part, we do better on average than most guys. And a lot of guys are just the weekend warrior. just go out on the weekends and hunt their spots that they know, which is cool. But I think if you're a pretty decent duck caller and kind of understand just trafficking ducks and looking at ducks and scouting, you can have success up here. Most guys, though, for the most part, I'd say don't necessarily. And that's not necessarily a lack of skill. It's just not, I guess, putting in the effort that the guys that
do. Do you feel like since you're able to work so often that you get a better feel for the flatlines and the habits and how they work in the area than most people?
Yeah, and it's pretty much the same thing year after year, honestly.
What are their patterns? Pretty similar. So let me before you answer that question, like here in the main area that I hunt, I understand how they work. I understand where people are going to be hunting, how it's going to affect the birds, when and what line they're going to fly out, where their loafing pools are, when they're going to come back to the loafing pools. So I have a really good understanding of my little area, hunting it as long as I have. Is that, tell me, how does your area work as far as mallard movement on a normal year?
Yeah, so when they first show up, they don't know where the safe zones are at. We have a lot of reserves up here, pretty big areas that you can't hunt. And then once they kind of figure out that, they'll go from the reserve to food. And you're pretty much just setting up underneath that line where they're going back and forth on a day-to-day basis. And they usually feed every day. So it's pretty consistent. And as long as you have weather that kind of mixes them up and keeps them kind of dumb, you can usually get them. This year it was tougher for sure because we had so many stale days. But
you averaged how many birds a hunt did you average?
Yeah, like 5.5 or so.
That's your tough year? That's your tougher year?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know how many people listening want to reach through the speaker and slap you right now?
Yeah, I know.
I know. Man, it was so tough. We only averaged 5.5. How many drakes did you kill this year?
Off the top of my head, right around like 270.
Good God.
I think it was.
And that's not group. That's you personally, 270 mallard drakes.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say about that.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
What's your favorite recipe?
I do a lot of crock pot stuff. When it gets to that, that's pretty much all you can do, right?
Yeah.
Get the crock pot going and just keep eating.
Keep eating and keep eating and keep crock potting.
Yeah, and then we'll make jerky and pep stick too. Kind of use them that's as a blind such stack.
That's just such an unbelievable number, Jacob. 270. That's just incredible. That's gotta be, because as far as I know, like for me, like the 100 duck mark has always been very, very few people hit the 100 duck mark in a year. I mean, you know, they say 10% of the people kill 90% of the ducks, right?
Yeah.
And like the 100 mark, the 100 duck mark is a significant number to hit, and we're talking 270 mallard drakes. That's just so ridiculous. That's so amazing.
Yeah. My first year really getting after ducks, I hit the 100 mark, and I thought it was like legit. That was my goal going into the season was 100. And then the next year, because I've kept a journal for pretty much six or seven years now. And then the next year after that, I hit 250. And it's just kind of exploded.
Yeah, for real. Now, does your all of your the people you hunt with, do they have as flexible schedules as you have?
Yeah, for the most part. My core group of guys that I go out with do.
Gosh, you are very lucky individuals to be able to do that, just to be able to go and go and go and go.
We're also young, so we don't have families yet. And
yeah,
we're just taking advantage of it, you know, when we can. For sure. We love doing it so much.
Yeah. I can't remember what a question. I had a question. How many decoys is typical for you guys to set up?
We don't like doing more work than necessary just because we go so much. So we'll usually keep it to a dozen per guy. So if there's two of us, we'll run two dozen. If there's four of us, we'll go four dozen. Just so everybody's doing kind of the same amount of work. And I don't really think decoy numbers matter as much as like motion, as jerk strings and spinners and good calling.
So how much motion do you use?
We'll usually use two jerk strings, and then up here, you can't use electronic decoys. So we use pull string spinners. So you got to crank on them the entire time.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing. I did not know pull string spinners was a thing.
Yeah. I wouldn't have said that probably 5 years ago, but now it seems like every group has at least one or two of them going. So
how, when you tell me how that works, I had no idea that was, I've never seen one of those. How does this pull string spinner work?
It's pretty much just, I mean, I guess a mojo. I mean, they sit on we have like a little conduit, half inch pole. You sit in the ground and they have a peg on the bottom of it. You put it in, and then it has like a little pull cord and bungees connecting the wings. And the spinner handle connects to the pull cord, and that works the bungee.
So when you pull it, how does it, because obviously it can't be, the cord can't get wrapped in it. So what does it do to spin it? That's what I'm not understanding.
I guess the bungees work the wings because the wings are connected to the bungee. It's just a bungee that, man, I wish I had it. I'd just show it to you.
The tension of the bungee must somehow operate a spring, I would think.
Yeah, and then there's a stopping point too, because the pull cord that the string attaches to is only so long. So the stroke or whatever the motion, you only pull it probably like a foot, and then you release it, and then you just kind of keep doing that back and forth. And the motion's pretty typical. I mean, similar to like a mojo, but the wings are bigger. So I actually kind of like them more than mojos, because there's a spot up here that you can't use electronic decoys on the Yakima reservation. And we usually use pull strings there versus mojos. I think they're a little bit better.
Really? That's
a little bit more flash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to send me I'm sure I can just find it if I Google it. I've never known. I didn't know that was even. I wonder if people in Arkansas use those, because they can't use. I don't think they can use spinners in Arkansas.
Yeah, I don't know. Either. Yeah, I'll send you a link to them. They're pretty cool.
So how does the migration work in Washington? Do you guys have a decent number of birds that hatch right in your state, or do they all come from the north?
Yeah, we've got a pretty good local hatch. Not a ton of mallards, mostly like gadwall. And then we have quite a few teal that buzz through here in September and early October. The mallards usually don't start coming. We usually get a pretty decent calendar push right around the first week of November. This year is a little bit earlier because Canada froze, kind of like that second, third week of October. So we got a pretty good push right around October 25th this year, which is about a week earlier than normal. And then it just kind of, they just kind of filter through, honestly, through the rest of the year. A lot of the times they'll freeze up in December. And then in January, we'll get reverse migration pretty heavy, which is always fun. So, yeah, it always seems like we have new birds popping in and out of here on a weekly basis. You guys get the reverse migration pretty good in Kansas, don't you? I know you've heard you talk about it.
Yeah. It completely flips. In January, when you want south winds, you don't want north winds. North winds is going to mean ice and south winds. So you're looking for, if you can get like a 55-60 degree day in January, that's when, I mean, they ride that ice line, which that's why I love this area, the latitude of it, because those birds just ride the ice line like crazy. Mm-hmm. And even above the ice line, they'll find holes. So yeah. The ice line in January will go from mid Nebraska to mid Oklahoma, and it will just fluctuate. And so the ideal scenario from mid December to then January is you maybe have three events where everything freezes, maybe except the lakes. Even if the lakes do freeze, it's okay, but it's a little better if they don't, because it's just harder. If you get that deep a freeze, it takes a lot longer time to get a thaw. So you get a freeze, and then you get south wind and a thaw, and then it's maybe 4 days in between, and then another one. So if you can get that in a season where you get those freeze-thaw, and those ducks just keep moving, so they're fresh all the time because they're moving. They're just moving up and down with the ice line. And the pintails come back, and that's when we get the pintails with the big sprigs. So January can be – it's boon or bust, because you can either have – like the last weekend, we had just the most incredible hunting of the year. And it was because of that very thing. We were hitting a thaw.
Oh, we're pretty similar up here in those 55, 60-degree – days in January, you got a ripping 20 mile per hour south wind, or just money. Those are fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the best months if they're right. But I've also gone January's where you just can't kill anything, where it's just so difficult. Once you get hard freezes, you can kill birds, but just way more. You have to scout. Mm. When the reservoirs are frozen, and even like your navigable rivers will start freezing. And when that happens, just finding the birds is what's difficult. And yeah. So if you're someone that has a lot of time and you can travel a lot, then you're going to have fantastic hunts. If you're like a weekend hunter that doesn't have access to other people's information, you're just screwed, because it's just, you have to travel. But then once that ice comes off, it's phenomenal. That's when you will see the most mallards in the state will be on those thaws in
January.
That's
cool.
Yeah. Can you go back through kind of your upbringing? How did you get into the sport, and which is kind of, what's your background? I know you're only 25.
Yeah.
So a long history, but tell us about that a little bit.
So my dad's more of a big game guy. That's more typical for my area. I didn't really grow up with anybody that duck hunted very much. My dad did a little bit, but he is just more that he knew a spot or two. And that's what we'd hit every weekend. So I started going with him when I was like 5 or 6 years old. He'd go out there and backpack me across rivers and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I got my license when I was like 9, I want to say. But we mostly big game hunted. We'd go on like a duck hunt or two a year. But there's just something about duck hunting that I really liked. I like big game hunting too. But something about duck hunting I wanted. There's something about it just I wanted to continue. I knew there was more out there.
There's definitely something about waterfowl hunting that's different, no doubt.
No, I love it. I don't know. When I got my license when I was 16, I started going with some buddies. I dragged some guys from high school out, and we'd go, and we didn't know what we were doing. We were just having fun. Then once I graduated high school is when I kind of got more serious into it. I figured out that I could just take online classes for college during the winter.
Yeah, nice.
And I spent a ton of time just learning spots, filing information away year after year, and just building on it. That's the biggest thing, I think, is just building off of what you learn.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep going. There's always stuff to learn, and just having an open mind about it. And yeah.
In a given season, how many different locations will you hunt? And I consider locations, like we have complexes here, then they'll be named, like let's say you have a reservoir, and on the top side of the reservoir where the water flows in, you have all the marshes. And I might say I've got 6 different places I like to hunt at that location. So I don't mean locations, I mean different spots. Like if you're hunting a river, you may have 4 spots that you love on that river. In a given year, how much will you vary where you're about how many different spots would you say you're hunting?
A lot. I'd say we hunt between 25 and 35 spots a year throughout Eastern Washington. And I don't live in a very good duck area where I'm at. So I'm traveling at least an hour every morning to go hunt. Typical morning, we're going 2 hours to 2.5. But yeah, we do a lot of,
can you see the mountains where you're hunting? Cause I know you have mountains in Washington. Are you hunting right up against them, or which side of the Rockies are you on?
No, we have the Cascades up here. And where I live at is actually right up pretty much at the base of the Cascades. The duck hunting on Eastern Washington is mostly, east. So you don't really see the mountains at all. Where you see guys hunting in Western Washington, they'll be more in the mountainous stuff.
So it's more prairies, or is it flat cropland or rolling hills?
Flat cropland. Mm. A lot of agriculture.
Yeah, and then when you have marshes, it's just depression. So now they have state-run marshes?
Yeah, we do. They're not very big, though. I think our biggest complex is like 20 blinds, and they're like 200 yards apart. So
They're said you have to go to the blinds?
Yeah, for the state ones.
Do you stay away from those?
We'll hunt them once in a while. Usually it's got to be really good because they're heavily pressured, and I just don't like dealing with all those guys out there because usually they're filled up every day.
Mm-hmm. Are there a lot of pressure, a lot of duck hunters in Washington?
Yes and no. And the more popular areas there are, for sure. But you can get away from it fairly easily, I'd say. But those state complexes are definitely some more of the popular areas guys like to hunt.
So give me a little more on hunt preparation and how your group decides where it is you're going to hunt. Just make up a scenario in which, or think of one from the last year that you and your friends are talking. What are you seeing, and what are you thinking that brings you to, okay, we're going to hunt this one spot?
Yeah. So usually it happens after we get done hunting in the morning. So we'll go and hunt. Usually we're done by 10:30, 11 o'clock. And then from there, we'll scout all the way back to our houses. So pretty much, I mean, we're together while we scout. We don't really split up too much. And, you know, if we can find a spot where a bunch of birds are sitting, that's an obvious X, then we'll hit that. And then it also, I mean, what we're seeing in the morning while we're hunting too. I mean, if we see a bunch of birds in a different spot, or if we think that spot that we hunted in the morning, we'll shoot again, we'll hunt that back to back. But yeah, and then if we don't really find an X, or it's a spot we hunt in the morning isn't looking too good for the next day, then we'll go and just try to find a flight line to set up under.
So you're seeing birds in the air, and you're seeing them go from A to B, and then you find where they're coming from.
Yeah, usually it's
just
like,
see them flying.
Yeah, usually it's from a food source back to a refuge. So we're just,
so you know the area well enough that you see them coming back and you're like, all right, we know basically where they're going because we know the area, and we know that this marsh or river is under where they're going.
Yeah. Yeah. And we all have our binoculars and stuff. So we'll go and get on high points and glass and do what we can to get as specific as possible, to figure out exactly where we want to go that next morning. So yeah, scouting is definitely a huge part in what we do.
And you guys have a lot of widgeon in the state, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So but you guys are targeting.
A lot of them are in Western Washington, but Eastern Washington gets a lot of widgeon too, especially on the Columbia River.
But you're targeting mallards, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So what would you, if I came out and I was like, hey, I want to get on an all widgeon limit. Is that something that's obtainable? Like, you would know what different to do to shoot the widgeon versus the mallards, and what different about, why are the widgeon where they're at versus the mallards where they're at?
I mean, a lot of times on the Columbia, we'll decoy a lot of widgeon.
You just don't shoot them?
Yeah, we just let them go. But you know, there's definitely more specific widgeon spots on the Columbia, and I don't know exactly what it is, if it's like the food, because usually they're with coots. So I think it's just the grass mats and stuff probably underneath the water that the widgeon are going after. But yeah, no, it's definitely a attainable thing to do, shooting all widgeon limit especially, I mean, pretty much any time in December or January if you wanted to.
I've got two more questions for you, then we're going to hop to the Patreon-only segment. While I'm asking the questions, is there a way you could pull up your North American Waterfowler tab or app? I'm curious if you'd be willing to read just what your numbers ended up being.
Yeah, I can do that.
And so the two more questions I have, and these are the ones I forgot earlier. Who are you, the shot caller of your group?
Yeah.
And what is you guys' shot selection out there? Are you the type of like, well, if they're within 30, we'll take it, or we won't shoot it unless they're feed down? What, where you guys land on that?
It kind of depends. It varies on a day-to-day basis. We really want to shoot them with their feet down. But if it's one of those days where they're not necessarily finishing super great, we'll shoot them on the swing at like 25 to 30 if we have to. But what we're really going for, and we'll tweak all sorts of stuff before we have to kind of make that call. But that's what we're going to do for the day, or the rest of the day, is to shoot them on that swing. Usually you can figure it out though, and tweak something to figure it out to get them feet down.
All right. The other question I've got, I'm going to save for the Patreon only section. So we're going to have Jacob read off his numbers for us for the year. And then after that, we're going to move to a Patreon only segment. So I've got, there's a good number of segments of the podcast or full podcast that are Patreon only. And so if you want to hear this last segment or hear the other, like the first episode, the first two episodes I ever recorded are Patreon only. And there's a decent number of them. So patreon.com/freelanceduckhunting, and you can come over and you can, there's people right now watching and commenting right now alongside of us. You have access to that. You have access to the app. You've got access to message me personally, all sorts of stuff. So, and the extra podcast. So if that's something you're interested in, then, and I'm 90% sure, I haven't pulled the trigger on it yet, I'm 90% sure we're going to do a season 4 of the hunt giveaway. I need to make some tweaks and changes to it a little bit, but 90% sure we're going to do that as well. So that is over the patreon.com/freelanceduckhunting. There's multiple tiers to select from that give you multiple benefits. So go and check that out. Do you have those numbers ready for us, Jacob?
Yeah, I just got them pulled up.
Okay, read off your numbers for us.
Okay, it was 264 mallard drakes, so I was off by a little bit.
Yeah, and how many hens?
63. And then 9 pintail drake, 1 widgeon drake, and then 1 wood duck drake. And then 15 Canada geese.
Now that's a mallard purist right there.
Yeah.
You are the epitome of a mallard purist, my friend.
I wish I wasn't like that.
No, man, do what you want to do. That's one problem we have in this sport. It's like, if you want to be a mallard purist, you should have every right to do it, as long as you don't start criticizing other people, which I've never seen you do. I know that you don't criticize other people for how they do it. Jordan and I were talking about that in the last podcast. It's like he shoots and has no problem with shooting hens. I don't want to shoot hens, and that's fine. It's like, we all have our love for the sport. So how you do it versus I do it, as long as it's ethical, who cares? Like water swatting. If you don't want to water swat, by all means, do not water swat. Why you care whether I water spot or not is a mystery to me. And I don't mean you personally, obviously, but you know, it's like, so if you want to be a mallard purist, it's your game. You get to do it. You don't, shouldn't be apologetic for it at all. That's the way you like to do it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just like the way mallards react to calls.
Yes.
Versus any other species of duck, in my opinion.
Yeah. Did you hear the whole conversation I had with Jordan Frommer on wood ducks by chance?
No.
We had this whole debate about how decoyable wood ducks are, and reflecting back on that conversation, I don't think I quite said it the way I wanted to say it, because ultimately you just said it. The way mallards react to a call and what they do in the air when they're decoying and working, and that's what wood ducks don't do. That's what I love. It's like, well, yeah, maybe they'll fire in and plop down your decoys from time to time. That's not the game. It's that, it's how they react. It's how they circle. It's how they change their wings and everything in the air. That's the whole thing that wood ducks don't do that I love about mallards. And you just said it too. It's like, that's the game, right?
Yep, that's what gets me going every morning that I can, trying to trick those things. And it's a game of, I don't know, cat and mouse, but it's a game for sure.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I you know, even on bad days, if I have mallards working and we're shooting a few, then you'll hear me say, hey, at least we have a game to play. It's like, as long as you're in the game, you're calling mallards, they're reacting. Even those frustrating days where they're kind of winning, it's still so much fun. Because when they're circling and they're circling, even if you don't get them in, it can be really frustrating. But it's still those times when they're working is just so much fun because you've got a game to play.
Yep. Yeah, no, I agree.
And it, if they never won the game, it wouldn't be fun. I don't think they ever win the game for you.
But. You can't get them every time. No, they do. They get us once in a while.
Right.
But now, if you got them every time, it wouldn't be as fun, for sure.
Yeah. Well, those numbers are – congratulations on the success you guys have been able to carve out in Washington. I know that I've been talking with – actually, Jake and I were talking about trying to take a trip to Washington. And so if we ever did that, linking up would be fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, you have my number, so –
yeah, we're talking about it, actually. We're talking about, because that's the one state before I ever even knew your success levels out there. That's the place when people have asked me, you know, where's the number one, your bucket list place? And that's it. It seems gorgeous. It seems to have so many birds. It just, you know, that whole Pacific Northwest in general, but Washington. So congratulations on your win on the leaderboards. Congratulations on your season. What is your Instagram handle in case people want to follow you?
It's @CAFF_Calf. It's my last name, Caffrey.
All right.
So Calf.
Anything else you want to close out with before we move it to the patron only section?
No. Thanks for having me on. It's been fun.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you Patreon listeners, you are going to get the rest of this. We're going to do about another 10-minute or so segment and talk about, I want to hear what gun, what ammo, what kind of blinds you use in your hide, all those kinds of things. So if you want to hear the segment, patreon.com/freelanceduckhunting. If not, you've listened to another episode of the North American Waterfowler Podcast.
You're listening to the Waypoint Podcast Network, brought to you in part by HuntStand, the number one hunting and land management app.